We began a little discussion last week of the pasuk that we Adon Yahu, when he sees that his plans are crumbling and Shlomo has been appointed king, runs to the Mizbeach, and the message gets back to Shlomo that Adon Yahu is afraid of him. And Shlomo says, "Im yel ben chayil o yipa misarasa," if he will be a ben chayil, a valorous person, whatever that means, we'll see. Lo yipa misarasa, not a hair of his head will fall to the ground, nothing will happen to him. Vimrati matse bavameis, but if evil will be found in him, he will die. And we pointed out that the Mitzudas David says that what Shlomo meant was that even if he does something wrong, which in and of itself is not worthy of the death penalty, but he'll die anyway because of his past record. And we pointed out that this is very much meduyuk in the pasuk, because otherwise it's an unnecessary statement. If what he's telling him is that if you commit another crime, if you commit an act of treason that's punishable by death, you'll die, that goes without saying. He's no better than anybody else. He might be worse, but he's certainly not better. So the question becomes that why is that so? Why should Adon Yahu die for a crime that's not Chayiv Misa? Now there is a certain amount of leeway that's granted to a king in order to run the government what he feels to be a threat, but there has to be some rationale or justification. Certainly Shlomo HaMelech would not be abusing the power that was entrusted within him. So the first question we need to ask was Adon Yahu Chayiv Misa for what he already did. Adon Yahu, we set up this party. We pointed out a number of times that Adon Yahu never beferish said that he was king. He only said that he will be king one day. But he set up the party in such a way that people should think he's king, by inviting all the dignitaries, by acting as a king, having 50 people running in front of him, bringing a lot of karbanos. So he was putting on a show, and the people responded by saying, Yichi Adon Yahu HaMelech. Was that an act of treason, and therefore was he punishable by death? And perhaps the simplest explanation of this pasuk would be to say yes, that this was an act of treason. The fact that he didn't himself beferish say he's king, but if he set the stage to act as a king, perhaps that was an act of treason. Shlomo HaMelech was going lifnim mishur esadin, he had the right to kill him right or now, but Shlomo was doing him a favor and giving him a conditional pardon. Look, you're really chayav misa. I could kill you now without you doing anything else. So I'm going to be very generous, and I'm going to say, listen, I won't kill you now, but if you do anything else wrong in the slightest, the deal's off. And therefore you are, I will kill you then. This would, Lachar explain the dilemma, why he'd be killed for a non-capital offense. Yet, if you look around, the Mefarshim do not seem to understand it this way, at least the ones that I've seen. And I think the reason may be that this is not so simple. If Adon Yahu was really Chayiv Misa, it's not so simple to pardon him, even a conditional pardon. Because a king has to worry about the authority of his office, and it's not a personal issue. On a personal issue, you could be very generous, and you could be Mavral Midosov, and so on. But for a king to do that is not so simple. And there is a Gemara in Yuma that brings out this point very interestingly. The Gemara in Yuma says that the reason why Shaul HaMelech was not able to pass the Melucha on to his children was because on the day that he was appointed king, the Navi records a story. Shaul, by the way, you should know, was not a popular choice to be king. He was unknown. His outstanding midah was Sneas. Nechpa El HaKevim, as the Pasuk says. He used to hide himself. And people didn't know who he was. And they were probably, you know how it is, you know, when you the talk of having a king, there were probably people who were prominent, already had perhaps achieved military prowess and were well known, and different candidates, you know, like they're speculating who's going to be selected, you know, to be the Supreme Court judge. Everyone has their ideas who's out there, and then you come with a surprise. So it wasn't so popular. But Shmuel HaNavi said, this is what Hashem wants. You know, people accepted it. But there were two people described as B'nai Belial, low lives, who made fun of Shaul. They were Morid B'malchus. The people should have stopped them. They didn't. Everyone stood by silently because, although nobody else had the rishus, had the chutzpah to go ahead and openly defy Shaul and insult him and make fun of him when Shmuel designated him as king, but they weren't so thrilled with his selection either. Didn't stand up for him. But Shaul gathered together an army because the Plishtim were knocking on the door, went to battle, and they were victorious. All of a sudden, he's popular. Now, people are very happy that he's king. So the first order of business when they come back is to find these two B'nai Belial and take care of them. So Shaul HaMelech said, today is a day of celebration. The Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a Yeshua. We should celebrate. Don't do anything to them. Let's not mar the celebration by having to kill these two people. At that moment, it was determined that Shaul would not be able to pass the Melucha onto his children. The Gemara, and you asked the question. Well, first the Gemara quotes and says, why is that so? Because they quote a statement by a Tana, the Kol Talmud Chacham She'enu Nokem V'Noter K'Nachash. Enu Talmud Chacham. Any Talmud Chacham that does not take revenge and bear a grudge like a snake is not a Talmud Chacham. That's what the Gemara says. So the Gemara asks the Kasha, but what do you mean? Doesn't the Torah say Lo Sikom V'Lo Sitor? You're not allowed to take revenge. Gemara says that's talking about monetary things. In other words, in personal issues, you shouldn't take revenge. But an insult is different. And the way it's interpreted is, an insult is different. It is an interesting piece, by the way, if you ever have a chance, in the Hakdama to the in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, in the Hakdama section, where he lists all the different averus that a person could violate in Lashon Hara, and he lists taking revenge, because sometimes a person could say Lashon Hara to take revenge on somebody. He goes through this sugya, that Api Halacha, there's a Machlokas Rishonim exactly how it applies. But at the very least, what everyone agrees is that if somebody personally insults you, and you, at the moment, b'shas maisa, respond in kind with an insult, you're not violating the Isser v'lo sikom v'lo sita. That's considered beyond that which could be absolutely required by the Torah. The high madrega, as this Gemara itself quotes, is na'lav v'ena olvim, is not to respond. But it's not an absolute chiyuv of v'lo sikom v'lo sita. To get back at him after time has passed, when you had a chance to cool off the next day, is a machlokus rishonim. And the Chavetz Chaim ends up saying, he lines up the shittas, they're pretty much even on both sides. So he says it's a suffik deraisa, and suffik deraisa is the chumrah. You're not allowed to do it. But this is the issue. But a Talmud Chacham and a Melech who has a position to uphold, so the Gemara is implying that when it comes to a personal insult, you have to take revenge. The Gemara continues and says, wait a minute. Doesn't it say that elavim ve'ena olvim? If somebody is insulted and does not respond, shomea cherpasam ve'ena meshivim. They hear their shame and they do not answer. Aleim akasav omer ketzeis Hashem esgurasa. The pasuk says about him, he's like the sun rising in splendor. It's a tremendous madrega. So how could we have a taina on Shaul for acting in a way which is a tremendous madrega? The Gemara says, the Notrele Belibe. The Pasuk Nelav Mena Olvim is talking about not responding in kind. But you should hold it against him in your heart. Then the Gemara asks, doesn't it say Kol HaMavir Al Midosa Mavir Lo Min HaShemayim? A person who gives up on his rights. Mavir Al Midosa is a person has a right to have a taina on another person. But he forgoes that right and gives up on that right. So then, Mavir Lo Min HaShemayim, which, by the way, is a great thing to think of during these days of Aser Shemei Tshuva. Doing tshuva is hard. This is not easy either. But it's a tremendous schus. If people forgive others and don't bear a grudge against others, even when they have a right to, then they could turn to HaKadosh Baruch and say, I know, HaKadosh Baruch, you have a right to have a tainus on me. But I forgo my tainus on others, so Hashem judges us, Mida Keneged Mida. He will forgo the tainus against us. So what do you want from Shaul? Says the Gemara, What that means is, if the guy tries to make up with you, you allow him to make up with you, you forgive him. So, I heard an explanation of this Gemara from Rameir Chadash, who was the Mashgiach in Hebron, a Talmud of the Altar Slabatka, and he explained that there are two reasons, there are two ways in which a person can sometimes not respond, not bear a grudge against somebody who's done an avo. One is, I understand what you've done. You've done an avla, but I forgive you. That forgiveness should only be there if the person has a certain amount of charata. That's mefayis levin nispayis. If he's mefayis, you should forgive him. But if he has not had charata, why are you forgiving him? If you're forgiving him despite that fact, it's because you don't really feel he did anything so bad. Which means you do not appreciate your own position. You do not appreciate who you are. You do not appreciate what it means to be a melech. Why then is there a din of nelav v'meina olvim? Because it's a very slippery slope. If somebody insults you and you respond, are you responding because he deserves it? Or are you responding because you're personally hurt? It's very, very different. Theoretically, if you were to respond only because he deserves it, it would be okay, it would be proper. But it's a difficult thing because you are personally hurt. So the response tends to be disproportionate. Sometimes you might witness Reuven insulting Shimon and you'll stick up for Shimon. And Shimon might even be a total stranger to you. Or a very casual acquaintance, but you understand that Reuven did something wrong. But if Reuven insults you or he insults your son or your brother, and you're sticking up for him, you stick up a little more vigorously. That extra vigor is personal. That's not l'shem shemayim. So the best thing is, nalav v'mein alav him. Don't answer at all because you may go overboard. But what happens if somebody else is sticking up for you? Why should you stop him? Do you not understand the avla that this person did? Do you not understand what it means to be a melech? If you don't understand what it means to be a melech, you can't pass the melucha on to your children. So that's not called forgiveness. That's called caving in. That's called not appreciating your own dignity. We actually came into this discussion. We asked Rameir Chadash a question. Slabatka was known for the concept of godless Adam, of the dignity of a person, the greatness of a person. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says ma'od ma'od hevi shfal ruach, a person should be of humble spirit, and the Rabbeinu Yonah brings down on that Mishnah ma'isa b'chatzer echad, who was on a, some say it was Rabbeinu Yonah himself, was on a boat, the only Jew among a boatload of goyim, and one evening the sailors were drunk and they began to harass him. And it got to the point that one of the drunken sailors came and urinated on him. He said he did not respond. He kept his calm. It was very, no response. And then not only that, a moment later when he realized that he didn't respond, he was very happy because he was mekayim the Mishnah of Ma'od Ma'od Hevi Shva Ruach. So we asked Rameir Chadash, how does that correspond to the concept of man's dignity? It doesn't bother you? Doesn't mean anything? So he answered, first after a pause, he said to us, Tagidli, mi hu ashafel? Rabbeinu Yonah or Hagoy? He says, who's the lowlife in the story? Rabbeinu Yonah or the Goy? Or the Chassid, whoever it was, or the Goy? The fact of the matter is, what would have been accomplished by responding? You're the one Jew in a boatload of goyim, they would have killed him. So there was nothing you could do. The only question is, do you get all worked up or you don't get all worked up? So this chassid understood, if I am suffering, it's min hashamayim. If a tree falls and hit you, you should not get angry. Some people do, but you should not get angry at the tree. It's not, because Rucka wants me to suffer, he wants me to suffer. So I accept that. If there's something I could do, I do it. But if there's nothing I could do, then I don't. But it doesn't mean that I think that this guy is okay, that what he did is fine. He's a shuffle, he's a lowlife. And if somebody were to take care of him, I wouldn't stop him. And then he went into this discussion of the Gemara. You have to understand the Natsulei Belibe, that it's different. You understand the Avla. If he's sorry, if he's apologetic, you should forgive him. But if not, you can now. Was Adoniyahu apologetic and sorry? Not really. And there were indications from his behavior, as we pointed out last week. He demanded a shvua from Shlomo. He ran to the mizbeach. He didn't run to Shlomo. So he was not really apologetic. He just realized that it's in his best interest not to maintain this battle because he's going to lose. So Shlomo perhaps would have been improper for him to forgive Adoniyahu. Had Adoniyahu really been chayav misa, for Shlomo to forgive him, then Shlomo would be making the same mistake that Shaul did. And therefore, perhaps that is why the Mepharshim don't learn it this way. Rather, they assume that Adoniyahu was really either not chayav misa or wasn't provable, it wasn't known whether he was chayav misa. We will see the different variations. And therefore, Shlomo was answering really Mishuras Hadin, that right now, I'm not going to kill you because right now it's not appropriate to kill you. But you should know that if you do anything else, then you will die. So now the question is why? The Lashon of the Metzudas David is, if I could read the fine print there, I have a larger edition at home. Even something that was really not deserving of death, you must die anyway. Through the combination, adding in with this that you already done. In other words, a half plus a half equals a whole. Now, how does that work? And if you do an aver that's not chayav misa, and then you do another aver that's not chayav misa, it doesn't add up to a chayav misa. So, when you're dealing with the aver, this particular aver, which is a rebellion, and the question becomes, are you a threat? Are you a threat to the security of the country? A rebel is not chayav misa just because of the enormity of his crime. He's chayav misa because of the danger that he poses to Klal Yisrael. It's undermining the authority of the melech. So a repeat offender is an increased danger. I think for two reasons. One reason is that you see it wasn't simply a momentary lapse. You know, a person could be overcome by some emotion, some desire, something, and lose himself and do something foolish. But if he does it again, you see this is already part of his nature. This is not a person who is simply lost in the moment. So what's to stop him from doing it a third time and a fourth time and a fifth time? So now he becomes a danger to the country. So whereas the first quasi-rebellious offense, which wasn't quite a rebellion but was close enough, perhaps it's not yet chayav misa. If you do it again, then it becomes apparent that you are going to potentially do it a third time. Similar avera. It has to be. He's talking about an act of, as we'll see later, Adoniyahu did do it again, and it's an act of attempting to maneuver to try to get possession of the throne.
And at this point, would it matter if the avera that he did was shogeg or benezer?
It probably would. It probably would. I don't know. I don't know how it works. You know, with a shogeg in these areas. But I think here the question would not be whether it was a shogeg or a mezid, but the question would be whether it was an outright rebellion or not. And what he did later was also not an outright rebellion, but it indicated, you know, the same direction. Also, the Chazal tell us that when a person does the same thing a second time, that itself removes the inhibitions. It's not only a simon, so to speak, that he is motivated to rebel, and it wasn't a momentary lapse of judgment, but it's also a siba. It causes it to become easier. When a person does an aveira and repeats it, the Gemara says, nasis lo kehetir, he begins to feel as if it is mutter, and therefore will have a much easier for him to do it a third time and a fourth time. Actually, Rav Itzel Petterberger, also in Yonah Diyoma, talking about tshuva and Eseres Yemei Tshuva, and I want to get into, maybe at a different time we'll get into more arichos, but he, I'm sure I'll have another opportunity, but he just briefly points out that the Nevi'im, Yecheskel Navi in particular, had a very, very difficult time convincing the people that tshuva works. They didn't believe it. At one point, it came to such a confrontation that the people said to Yecheskel HaNavi in Cain that this is true. Lo yitachein derech Hashem. Hashem's ways are not proper. To which Yecheskel responded, Halo darcheichem lo yitachein. It's your ways that are not proper. But they couldn't accept tshuva. And the Gemara refers to Dorosh Yecheskel as Ketanei Emuna, people with only a small amount of Emuna. Says Rav Itzel Petterberger, have you ever met a person today who doesn't believe that tshuva could work? I've never met such a person. So what are we now? Gedolei Emuna? How come in other areas we don't have such great Emuna? Says Rav Itzel, the reason why everyone believes in tshuva today is because we don't believe in chet. We never really consider the chet to be so bad because we do chatoim typically repeatedly and it's not so keheter. Every chet is only midas chasinos. People want to take a new chumrah. You know, what's my new chumrah? You know, not to steal. I have a new chumrah not to speak lashon hara. But if you have a person, it's not to be, oh wow, what a tzaddik. But everyone's mechuyav not to speak lashon hara. So we look at everything as only epitome madrega midas chasidus as a chait. And I'll tell you something. If we really stop to think, I'm afraid to say this because then we'll stop believing in tshuva. But if we really stop to think about it, we have the same question that they had. And I'll give you a simple mashal. It says if you're walking down the aisle in a crowded store, let's say, or a subway platform, and somebody jostles up against you. It's a crowd, he bumps into you. And he says, I'm sorry. Because the first thing you do is to check that your wallet is still there. But okay, assuming that it is. He says, I'm sorry. Turns to the guy and says, you're sorry? You bumped into me. Saying I'm sorry doesn't make it go away. And you expect me to forgive you just because you say you're sorry? Forget about it. So we think the guy's a lunatic. Why? Because what did he do? He just bumped into you. No harm caused. It wasn't intentional. It was clearly, you know, nothing. So if there's no chait, of course you should forgive him. But what happens if a guy comes and breaks into your house and beats you up, steals everything you have, burns down the house? You end up spending 6 months in the hospital. Now you're in rehab and you're going down the street with a walker. And you meet the guy who did this to you, and he says, oh, I'm so glad I met you again. I got to tell you something, I was thinking over what I did. It really wasn't nice. I'm sorry. It's a little different. When we are makir the chait, we're also not makir tshuva. Nebuzaradan killed 90,000 Jewish children at one time. And because of the bubbling blood of the Navi, Zechariah Navi, a Kohen the Navi, and finally turned to Shemayim and said, do you want me to kill them all? And the blood stopped. And he made a Kal v'chomer. This is the punishment the Jews suffer for killing one person. I, who just killed more than 90,000 people, what kind of punishment awaits me? And he did tshuva, and his tshuva was accepted. And he murdered 90,000 people. So he's sorry. Not so easy to accept that. So we begin to understand. They, people ask me, if Hitler would have done tshuva, would his tshuva have been accepted? There is such a thing in Chazal that you could be so bad that you can't do tshuva. Or some people held that by Paro. So I assume if that applies to anybody, it applies to Hitler. But what about one of the underlings? Not so simple. So tshuva, it's not the real reason why we all believe in tshuva is not because we're gedolei emuna, but because you know, we're shona chota vishona. We repeat our chatoim, so we don't view them as being that bad. We look at more like bumping into somebody in the subway. Of course, tshuva should be accepted. So the truth of the matter is, getting back to Adon Yahu, that if he was do it a second time and it's not spoke heter, then the inhibitions against such a crime would be removed. So then Memeli becomes more dangerous. So it becomes more dangerous because you see that it wasn't a momentary lapse in the passion of the moment. So therefore that means he's an enemy of the state, so to speak. And it becomes more dangerous because since he's done it twice, it's easier for him to do it a third time. And now he will have to be killed. I think that's probably the pshad of the Mitzvah David. The Malbim says a slightly different variation. He also says that he was not Chayav Misa, but he says that if you were to sin again, then you will be Chayav Misa Limafreya, retroactively. What does he mean by that? I believe what he means is that in order to properly judge Adon Yahu, you really have to know what his motives are. If he was somewhat innocent, he didn't realize that Shlomo was supposed to be the king, or at least maybe he didn't realize that Shlomo was supposed to be the king right away, or maybe he didn't really mean to proclaim himself as king, he was just a party. You know, it's hard to pin it on it. Of course, the way the Pesukim described what he did indicates that he knew full well what he was doing, but did Shlomo know full well what he was doing? He had evidence, you didn't invite Shlomo to the party. Okay, but there might not have been sufficient evidence to prove what your intent really was. If your intent was really to take over the throne, you're ready, Chayav Misa. But says Shlomo, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt because I can't be certain that that's your intent. But if you make another move at the throne, then I could be sure that that's your intent. Again, you know, as a former high school principal, I often had to face the problem where you had two or more students involved, shall we say, in the same infraction. But one guy was a pretty good student and basically didn't do that much wrong and probably got caught up, you know, in the swing of things. The other guy was a mu'ad, you know. This guy was a constant issue. So you didn't always deal with the perpetrators in exactly the same way. So naturally, the guy would say, hey, you know, Chaim Yanka did the same thing. How come you're cracking down on me? So I used to tell, I made up this muscle for them, but it's the same idea I think the Malbim is talking about. He says, you know, you're a police officer on patrol, and you hear the sound of breaking glass. You turn on the lights, follow the sound, you see some fellow, there's a display window in a jewelry store, and the guy sitting in the display, the window is shattered, he's sitting there. Come out, the guy comes out with his gun out, puts his hands on the officer. You got to believe me, this was an accident. It's icy. The sidewalk is icy. I was running down the block. I slipped and flying into the thing and it broke. All right? He searches him. There's nothing in his pockets, nothing in the thing. Says, look, you know, maybe you can't give him the benefit of the doubt. 2 weeks later, patrolling in the neighborhood, a different jewelry store. Here's again the sound of breaking glass. Pulls over. Look at that. It's the same guy with the same story. This time I don't believe you. It's hard enough to believe it happened once, but I'm not going to believe that it happened twice. So the point is that, said Shlomo, it's a little bit straining my credulity to believe that you were innocent, but absolutely sure I'm not. Perhaps it was innocent. I'm not ready to kill you yet. But you should know if it happens again, there's going to be no excuses. I'm not going to believe the same story a second time. And therefore, Lemafreya, it will reflect retroactively that you really were Chayav Misa the first time. It's just that I couldn't prove it the first time, and this will be the evidence. So, Yeh Masha Yeh, we have these two approaches. I believe the Mitzudas David that says, Tziruf, combination. The idea is that a repeat offender becomes more dangerous and therefore more subject, more guilty of Misa. And you have the Malbim who says it's Lemafreya, retroactive, that the second action reflects on the first and has meaning, gives meaning, and now we know really what your intentions were the first time. Now the Pasuk also says, Imtiel ben Chayil, what does that mean? The Targum, which has been doing this all along, if you haven't noticed, has been consistently translating Ben Chayil as Yirei Chet. To be a person who's upright, Erlich, fears sin, then you have nothing to worry about. The Radak over here explains the connection between the simple meaning of chayo and yirei chet of the Targum. The chayo cheta is that the simple meaning of chayo usually is valor, bravery, strength. There is no greater strength than to be yirei chet. Ezehu gibor hakovesh yisro. What requires the most strength is to restrain yourself. And the yirei chet is somebody who restrains himself. So there is a connection between the simple meaning and the deeper explanation that the Targum Yonason gives. Others learn that chayil here is in reference to service to the king. If you will be a loyal servant of the king, then you have nothing to fear. But if you act against my interests, then you should know that you will be dealt with. So, the pasuk continues. We'll see if we can finish the parak before Yantif. The Vayishach HaMelech Shlomo, Shlomo sent messengers, Vayoridu Me'al Mizbeach, and they took him down from the Mizbeach. Again, the implication of the pasuk is that even now, Adoniel did not leave voluntarily. Because you'll note, he never got what he asked for. He asked for Shlomo to swear to him that he was not going to kill him, and Shlomo did no such thing. Not only did he not swear to him that he was not going to kill him, he told him, if you do anything out of line, I will kill you. So Adonijah didn't really get what he asked for. And he didn't come voluntarily, but he was schlepped off the Mizbeach. He sent the messengers, you're coming whether you like it or not, or at least you're leaving the Mizbeach whether you like it or not. He may have come to the king afterwards voluntarily. Vayavo, he came by Yishtachu LaMelech Shlomo, and he bowed down to Shlomo. Vayomer lo Shlomo, and Shlomo said, Lech leBeisecha, go to your house. Why did Shlomo have to say, go to your house? Apparently, Adoniel was not leaving. Why not? So Mepharshim explained that Adoniel thought, When Shlomo said him Yil Aven Chayil, that he literally wanted him to serve the king, and he was afraid to leave. He says, you know, he's pressing me into service. If I leave without fulfilling my mission, then that itself will be the ra that Shlomo was talking about, and I'm in trouble. But Shlomo didn't really mean that. There are certain times that you're willing to deal with a person, but from a distance. Shlomo did not want Adoniel hanging around his court, and he didn't really want Adoniel to be in the inner circle, so to speak, of his service. He meant serve him like every citizen in the country. Do your civic duty, but stay home, take care of your family, but be an upright, honest citizen. Shlomo never intended for him to serve in his court, serve in his palace, because Lamaisi didn't trust Adoniel. Right, as we said before, that he either suspected that it may happen again, or he suspected that he really intended it in the first place, but he knew that he could not really rely on Adoniyahu, and he simply wanted him to go home and behave as any normal citizen. Mepharshim add as well that Shlomo HaMelech said Lech leBeisecha. The implication here, he didn't really have to tell him where to go. He could have said Lech, you could leave. Obviously Adoniel is going to go home. Lech leBeisecha implies to your house. Adoniel presumably did not have your average run of the mill house. He was a prince, he was a Ben HaMelech, a brother of the king, and he probably had a pretty, a little palace, maybe not as big as David's palace. But he had something. He was a nobleman. So what Shlomo is telling him is, I'm not taking anything away from your position and your stature and your dignity. You go to your house, you're still a prince, you're the brother of the king or the son of the king, brother, soon to be brother of the king, and you'll be treated with the covet that and the prestige that is befitting of your position. So when I say to you that nothing is going to happen to you if you do anything wrong, it isn't only that I'm not going to punish you physically, but I'm not going to take anything away from you. You're going to be dealt with in the same way that you would have been dealt with had you done nothing. So Shlomo was giving him every opportunity to live b'kavod. It's not as if anything happened to Adoniyahu. Anything to restrict, anything to justify Adoniyahu having a complaint and motivating Adoniyahu to do what he in fact did anyway, to attempt to get the throne again. So Shlomo treated him with dignity, only warning him of the possible consequences of any repeat efforts. Okay, so that's maybe we'll stop here. We could start after Yontov with Parag Beis.